Okay. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we meet today, and I would also like to pay my respects to elders past and present. Hello everyone, my name is Maria Hitchcock OAM and I am convener of this group. New England Visions 2030 Institute is a non-profit futurist think tank based in Armidale, New South Wales, with a vision for the future economic development and social well-being of the New England region. We meet with stakeholders and government at every level to examine the issues and any conflicts and follow up with recommendations and local action. We've run public forums about such issues as the GP crisis, which was attended by many local doctors and which was filmed by the ABC 730 report. We also ran three forums on the New England Renewable Energy Zone in a series entitled The Changing Face of New England. Recently, we ran a forum on cybercrime and scams, and we've been heavily involved in facilitating the formation of the Friends of the New England Rail Trail. We also ran a very successful Meet the Candidates recently. We'd like to thank the Armidale City Bowling Club for their in-kind support, and I'd like to thank Simon Scott Photo for allowing us to use his professional photos which appeared in The Guardian. And as soon as I finish speaking, we'll be running through those photos. Thank you to our panel of speakers for agreeing to share information about their organisation and how they've been helping with the resettlement program. The speaking order has been determined randomly. Each speaker will have 5 to 10 minutes to speak. All the speakers were invited to send photos to add to the PowerPoint presentation if they wished, and a couple of our speakers have taken advantage of that. They are also invited to bring any pamphlets to share with you, and these are at the back of the room at the entry on the tables. We normally try to avoid advertising of other groups in order to stay neutral, but we've made an exception tonight. At the end of the speeches, we'll open the forum to questions from the floor in the remaining time, and we finish at 7. Let me introduce the team. Associate Professor Dr. Julie Roberts, where are you, Julie? Over here, right. And she'll introduce the speakers and keep time. Peter Sneakers, over here. And Martin Levins, where are you, Martin? Up the back. We'll manage the microphones. And Peter Sneakers will offer the vote of thanks. Dr. John Atchison, where are you? John, there he is. John's just had a procedure in Coffs Harbour and has managed to make it back. That's dedication for you in time for this event. This event is being recorded by 2ARM FM and will be available on podcast. And I'd like to thank Michael Keane and his associates for facilitating that. I'm now going to walk over to my laptop and start the photographs.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this event. I'm going to be the person introducing each of the speakers, and I'd just like, for the benefit of the speakers, to explain that there'll be a maximum of 10 minutes. I've brought along my trusty glass and spoon, and I'll tap that at 9 minutes. If you're still talking, and if you're still talking at 10 minutes, I'll tap it again and ask you to wind up. So I'd like to start by introducing our first speaker on the list, and you'll see information up on the screen about each of the speakers. Our first speaker is Salam Caro, who's Community Development Project Officer with STARTS Armidale. STARTS is the New South Wales Service for the Treatment and Rehabilitation for Torture and Trauma Survivors, and they aim to heal refugee trauma and rebuild lives. So thank you.
Hi everyone. So I just want to also start by acknowledging the Aboriginal people as the traditional ones of this land and pay my respect to the elders past, present and emerging. And it's going to be their land as was and as always will be. And we are looking forward also to contribute and look after this land and serve this land forever. Thank you to the New England 2030 vision for inviting us to this forum and for choosing this Yazidi settlement in Amida for 5 years now. It's actually more than 5 years, but so thank you for that, Maria and head team. I wanted to start by giving some information about the Yazidi community, who we are and why we are here now and how we came. So the Yazidi community during the history being persecuted 74 times in the history, and the last and still unfortunately an ongoing one was on the 3rd of August 2014. As a result of more than 8,000 Yazidis who've been killed and 6,000 Yazidis who've been forced to the sex slavery and to the slavery markets and being sold to the ISIS members, to different members, and we still have 3,000 Yazidi who remain missing after a decade ago, after 10 years now. It's more than 10 years. And we are very thankful to the Australian government and to its people and to all of you by accepting the Yazidi community and giving another chance to rebuild their lives and to live in peace as everyone else here in Australia. And we are very proud to be part of this beautiful community, and the community feels very welcomed by all of you. And just another number that I will give, that the Yazidi community also living in Toowoomba in Queensland and in Wagga Wagga in Coffs Harbour and also in Maigambe in South Australia. So the number of the Yazidi community who lives in Australia has been close to 7,000 now, and we are expecting more Yazidis to arrive as well. So I would just mention some success things that have been happening here in Amida since the settlement, and then also the challenges, what the challenges are, and also what we do as staff's organization. So the community, as I said, it's not easy when you move to another country. It's completely different culture, different language, different people. But with the support from all of you and the services as well and the government, it's been very easy. And also the community itself supporting each other too. So that's also, it's been very useful and helpful and supporting the newly arrived to feel also welcomed and to settle properly. And the community started to purchase the houses, which is very successful thing, I can say. So far, we've got 6 families who actually now own their houses here in Amidal. And they started their own businesses, like the cleaning businesses, gardening, and as you saw on the pictures, the shops, they are starting to... We've got 2 shops here in Amidal as well. And the community are looking forward to other businesses to start very soon. And also, as you may be aware of, that so far we've got about 110 Yazidis who became an Australian citizen proudly, and I'm one of them, and I probably would say that we are citizens, and I was honored to receive the Australian Day Award in 2023. The Community Service Award. The other successful things that are happening now in Amidal, that we've got about 25 to 30 students who are studying at University of New England and in different branches and different... So some of them, they are actually doing psychology, science and medical science and in all different areas at the university, and also attending TAFE to do the short courses and also learning the English. So So that was the successful thing that I am aware of, and also integrating to the community. Like the community, I'm making lots of friends from the Yazidi community and the wide Australian community. And as well, we do have a good relationship with our brothers and sisters of the Aboriginal people, and we do respect and invite them in every occasion, in every event that we organize, and also we go and participate in their events as well. And that's also, I would say, something very positive to have that connection with all the communities, not just one community and others. And also, I was honored to receive that appreciation certificate by the New South Wales Police Force. We just done some info sessions again with the services that would be delivering after me. So we all collaborated to deliver some successful information sessions regarding the safety and also the driver's license. And that's why I was received this appreciation. A certificate of appreciation from the South West Police Force. And now I will be talking about the challenges. So the biggest challenge that we are facing as a Yazidi community, not just in Armidale, in whole Australia, is that the Yazidi community, the Yazidi language has not been recognized as a language for us in the interpreting services and also in the government agencies. And they are identifying the Yazidi community as a Kurdish Kurmanji community, or the language being recognized for us is a Kurdish Kurmanji. But again, this is very different to the Yazidi language, and we do have 2% of the Yazidi community who speak Kurdish Kurmanji. They actually live in Kurdistan region, and 2% speaks only Arabic. They actually Yazidis, but they speak only Arabic because they live in Nineveh. That's a second biggest city in Iraq. They actually Yazidis, but they only speak Arabic. But the people who came to Australia, 95% of them, and 96 of them, they are actually speaking Yazidi, where they came from, Sinjar, and the area where it was attacked by ISIS in 2014. So myself, with the support from the agencies and also the community members, we submitted to submission to NATI to get that language recognized, but unfortunately the board submission were rejected by NATI. But we will still work on that until it's been recognized, and we will continue to get that, because it's very dangerous when it comes to health, and we have a lot of health issue and lots of health interpreters. They are actually not from the community, and they misunderstood from each other, and the wrong decision has been done for our community. And it's very, very important for us to get that language recognized. And also the other thing, that the census. So in 2021 or 2022, we did identify ourselves in the census form as Yazidis, and across Australia, and when it comes to the results, unfortunately, they all gone again to the Kurdish Kurmanji community. There was non-Yazidi in that data. They only just the Kurdish or Kurdish Kurmanji. So we are also working on this to get the Yazidi community or the Yazidi religious be included in the census 2026, which is very important and part of our identity, because we are in a freedom and democratic country now, so we are allowed actually to speak, but back home we are not. So that's something very important for us. And the second thing is, I think it's not just for Yazidis, for all of you. So the GPs, we don't have enough GPs and the doctors. So we got lots of family members who didn't actually have a GP, and when they go to the emergency, so they will have to wait 10 hours, 7 hours, and then when they look again to the interpreters, there's no one available. And the childcare. So as a young father of 2 kids, I've been waiting 3 years now to get my child into the childcare. So it's again not just for Yazidis, for I think it's for all of you. So at starts we provide the support to the refugee communities in different areas. So we have the counseling, and most of our community, they have their own trauma because of the 74 times of the genocides. And so the stats are supporting the Yazidi community through the counseling and in trauma area. And also we got the school liaison officer who worked with the schools, supporting the schools, teachers, and also the students who have trauma, and engaging in a course as well. And also the CLSR, like community living supports for refugees and asylum seekers, that's also supporting the people who are in need and organizing like their appointments and taking them to the actors, and also inviting them to the activities. And we also have a youth worker to work with the community and engage the Yazidi youth with other communities and have the groups and also activities for the communities. And for myself, I work as a community development. I do everything. And I am organizing all the community events, commemorations, celebrations, and some of you might have already been in some of these occasions. So thank you for the time. As I said, and I'm proud to be Australian and looking forward to serve forever.
Thank you very much, Salam. And our next speaker is Madan Narana Murthy, who's going to talk to us. He's from Mosaic, Multicultural Connections, which was formerly the Northern Settlement Services. And as you can see up on the slide, they provide a range of programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, everyone. And nice to see everyone today's evening. And I also pay my respect to the past elders present on the land that we are meeting today, Anavan land, and pay my respect to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders. And also respect for the opportunity given to the multicultural and diverse community that has chosen this as a homeland. So with that note, so Mosaic Multicultural Connections, as said, is the newly registered business name for Northern Settlement Services. We've been in this settlement services for nearly 40 years, and we have offices in Newcastle, Hunter, Lake Macquarie, Central Coast, and New England. So primarily we provide settlement support services for people that are coming from refugee and other migrant backgrounds who want to settle in the regions that we support. We work with families. Is it? Just want to make sure. Yeah?
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, thank you. So we work with families, probably work with individuals and families and young people to assist in their settlement. We also provide services to elderly people from multicultural background to ensure that they get the right support and services for their needs. And also we do work on different programs that ensure that the community that we support are finding linkage to other services and link to the community that they were living in. So most importantly, in Armidale, we work with the Yazidi community very closely, which where we funded to provide the settlement support. When I say settlement support, it includes includes any sort of challenges or barriers that they come across on to their day-to-day settlement needs. It could be either from education, health, civic participation, you name it, either for an individual or the family that we help them. Apart from basic individual support, we also ensure that there is a lot of community social inclusion involved, like running a lot of community programs, like women's multicultural women's group. So we partner with SSI to run this program. We also partner with STARTS to run a young adult group. We also run a multicultural men's group just to ensure that the community is not just isolated, so we just make sure that they get connected to the other community. Apart from that, we also work in close with other services where, in a part of our settlement support, we want to make sure that our primary outcome, to be honest, is to make sure that they have the right knowledge, understanding about the systems and services that are available that can help them for the settlement, and also make sure that they have the right resources to make sure that they are independent on their upcoming living, because we don't want them to be relying on services like us and like you, like me, also like everyone. That we want them to be more individual in terms of seeking support. So in this process, we do a lot of education and information sharing, knowledge sharing sort of sessions that we do a lot of this during our support. We just don't support them and spoon guide them. We just make sure that they know what is and probably how to access the system, what are the processes involved, and how does it work, so that one day they don't need us. And that's the outcome that we want to achieve. And so far, we have kind of looking at where the community has sort of grown very well in terms of getting their needs done on their own, either accessing the friends that they know through the community, or either the support that they receive from other volunteer organizations. So it's good to see that the community is growing. The community is sort of self-dependent, resilient as well, with all the other natural disasters that we had. They have come across those things and become more resilient and more independent. So it's good to see that the community is being very adaptive. So we've been sort of encouraging that through our support. What Salam has spoken a lot of challenges here, and I think I would probably back on that. As I said, language is a key barrier for the community, and that is for any multicultural community or refugee community that is settling in any region, because it takes time to adapt, and we still learn how the new Centrelink system works in this new digital world. Put on these people that are coming with zero language barriers. You think about it; it takes a long time process. Hence, where our settlement support was initially 5 years, has now been extended to 7 years. So that's a good thing. So that we're not exiting our people that we support into the real world before they understand the system. So where I'm coming from is that the community has actually really grown from what the support they have received, and especially they are very much kind, and they very much really acknowledge the support that they have received, especially from the Armidale community. And at any point of interaction that we have, either through our consultation process or one-to-one session that we do, or any sort of intake process that we do in our usual process, they are very much happy, and they're very much privileged to be a part of this community, and they feel proud that they are getting more support, which they've been underprivileged where they've been living. So the settlement is quite a good successful in this region, if I could say. But the challenges were, as I said, is language. It was a real barrier. But it will probably change around, and the language will be recognized. It will be a good outcome. But apart from that, the community as a services, we all work together in this, and which was initially a challenge, but now it's not a challenge at all. We all work together, where we kind of like any sort of a challenge that appears within the community, we will just all come together quickly and then work on a model. How can we achieve this? For example, the citizenship test center was initially in Tamworth. We all just came together and said, let's go and advocate this. And now we have a citizenship test center locally. So that way they don't have to travel 100 kilometers to go and do the citizenship test. So as I said, so there's always a positive outcome that comes across where we work together. And it's not only through the services, through other volunteer organizations, and especially with the community as well. So my final note would be is that I can't say that everything is good, but as I said, there's a lot of challenges in every migrant settlement. And one other thing is there's always some kind of a new challenges branches out as the economic changes, as the natural calamity changes happens. But we are progressing well, that's what I see, and the community has shown their resilience very well. And as Salam spoken is that there is a lot of community members that have come out of their cocoon and started to build their own nest right now on being self-dependent and starting their own businesses, trying to branch out in different education systems and everything like that. So it's good to be working with this community, and we're also looking forward a lot of diverse community coming into this region. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Perfect timing. Sorry, I'll put this back up again after I finish. I'm a bit short. Our next speaker is Peter Lloyd, who's director of the Yazidi Agricultural Training and Development Program for the Rotary Club of Armidale. Thank you, Peter. Thank you. Just make sure that's high enough for yourself.
Good afternoon, everybody. And it's a rather long title, but it just means I'm one of a team. That especially is those people who work with Rotary Club of Armidale. As a service club and non-government in those senses, as I'm sure that Lucinda will say as well from Sanctuary's point of view, when we first learnt of the Yazidi community coming to Armidale as permanent residents, and that's important to note that they have all of the benefits that all of us have access to, there was a thought within the membership of our club, and we're very lucky to have a lot of members who have got a lot of agrarian, a lot of agricultural skills, marketing skills, business skills, and we said, how can we actually support the community in the best way possible? And as Madame said, it's a part of this cooperation between all the organisations in town where we were saying is how can we actually fit in and do something that's practical, do something that is beneficial and will be a lasting benefit to the Yazidi community. And the first thing, especially the first cohort that came through, and Caro can correct me on this, is members from that northern region who were from an agrarian background. So they had farming skills. So those of you from the land would know that no matter in the world where you are, there's a lot of skills that are actually common to every area. And when we first put forward this idea and had a workshop at a property about 6-7 kilometres west of town, you could actually see those particular Yazidi members going down, taking a lump of soil and smelling it and doing all the sorts of things, and then nodding and saying, okay, we know this, we know how perfect that soil is. So this just gives you an example of the starting of that process. So we thought, okay, let's get together, let's see how many families would like to come with us on the journey, where we can learn from the Yazidi community just as much as they can learn the conditions that we have in Australia, given we're the other side of the world, everything counterclimatic as well. So this just gives you a very quick idea of the early days. We had two of our Rotary Club members donate 10 acres of land each, for this particular project, one west of town, one east of town. This is the property just near the pine forest, east of town, and the left-hand side is the preparation. So there was an enormous amount of land preparation. The soils were a lot poorer here than they were on the western side, but it's got mulch, a lot of fertiliser, a lot of donated hay. We got mulch from everywhere, and so that's now a very fertile area. And so we actually got to about 2,000 linear metres. That's 2 kilometres of garden beds. Think about it. That's a lot of garden beds. We started off with about 8 or 10 families. That is now growing. We've actually got more land that's available now that we've developed. And I'll speak again towards the future at the end where we've now got 3,000 linear metres that we're making available to the Yazidi community. And the photograph was on the right was the produce that actually comes from that land. So when we got started, it was very much helping in terms of a farming background, but we very quickly learned that what we were doing is actually looking at the community, engaging the Yazidi community not only with our members and our members' families, but also working on those skill sets to communicate, especially as Madan said and Caro said, it's a language issue, but in terms of practical knowledge, the farming knowledge is a practical knowledge and it made life a lot easier. So there was this great engagement from the very start. It was a slow start, and we've all had those challenges because of the language and because Kamanji is actually not a written language. So there are all sorts of those sorts of issues. But we were actually working through that very successfully. We also decided, again, at a request of the Yazidi community, to build a hothouse. So this hothouse, and that's with the community helping us to erect that, the funding for that came ironically from the Rotary Club of Fort Myers, which is right in the middle of Cyclone Helen, and they actually provided the money to actually build that, and we had funds also from a Rotary Club in New York State to actually do the foundations. And then the state government came in with some other landscaping grants as well. So it's not only just been the members providing those services here in town, but we've been able to garner support not only nationally but internationally. The New South Wales government has been very supportive. We've built a lot of infrastructure, a major shed there that's providing shelter. And again, it was providing that safe environment for the Yazidi families to come. This is their land. They can use this. They can actually treat this in a very safe and very careful way. So from the produce, we then moved on to, well, how are we going to actually provide that to the community? So there were a lot of training programs involved with these. This was a community produce stall down in Urala. That's the Creeklands. And so this was part of the development process. We then found out, for those of you involved with council, that food handling certificates were required, food service certificates were required. So we then had to go into a training program to train the Yazidi community again in providing those services and being able to sell, not only in a competent way, but a legal way, at all of the markets. So there was great interaction between those selling those produce, and those of you who have been to those markets will have appreciated the great interchange of ideas, the interchange of communication with people buying and buying that produce. So that was another aspect of, again, community engagement. We then moved on to another aspect where there was a request beyond agriculture, and this was a machinery training program that was put down. The first program was run in November last year. TAFE New South Wales brought equipment up from Orange, the backhoe and the loader, and Transport for New South Wales provided the training. The PNG is a charity from Sydney, supported funding in terms of providing translation services, and we provided some coordination services to bring all of that together. Highly successful. Can you believe, with the lack of language skills and the lack of written language, half a morning was spent on work, health and safety. By the afternoon on day one, these guys were all on machines. It was actually a very successful program, and the instructors all commented that these were the best students that they'd had for many years. So it's a very successful... Sorry, I get a bit emotional because it was hugely successful. So from moving on from the training program, that's now being replicated in Coffs Harbour. So that program is now going to be run with the Coffs Harbour Yazidi cohort in the first week of December. And they're taking the lessons that we learned here in Armidale, transposing those down to Coffs Harbour. So that's another community that hopefully will benefit from that. Another aspect is in leadership. So we actually, part of the Rotary international network is the provision of a whole lot of training and leadership programs. And one is the Rotary Youth Leadership Program. And we've had now two participants in that service. And the last participant was a gentleman by the name of Basan. And I'll just read out just a couple of comments that Basan made as a result of this week-long week-long training program for youth development. It's called RILA, as I said, Rotary Youth Leadership Program. RILA challenged me in ways I had not experienced before. I discovered aspects of myself that were hidden before. Without a doubt, my week at RILA has been a highlight of my time in Australia. And more importantly, I felt completely accepted. It was a transformational experience, and I've grown in confidence, and I've learnt that I've got many qualities that I can share with my community. So here is a leadership program that Bassam is going to bring back to the Yazidi community, and he wants to encourage more of his colleagues and friends to participate in these leadership programs in the future. So again, it's expanding that network, expanding those ideas, and trying to bring all of those things forward. And then lastly, just looking towards the future, part of the process that we have with the Rotary Yazidi Agricultural Project is with Rotary Australia World Community Service. That's called RAWCS in a very general sense. And there are flyers on the table, so I'd encourage everyone, just please take a look at the flyer. It's a program that's run by Rotary. It's one of several hundred projects around the world. It's quite unusual because it's on Australian soil. It's not international. But the thing is that it's fully tax deductible. So if anyone would like to even make a small donation for the next phase of these Yazidis coming through so we can actually do more training programs and more support programs, have a look at those. The instructions are all there for you to help. So as I said, we've now got 3,000 linear metres, and a lot of extra work that is being actually done to support the community. So we believe that it's just one small part of that team effort for Armidale to actually welcome the Yazidi community and look forward to a wonderful future for them and for everybody else. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. You're obviously a man who knows how to get the timing spot on. Our next speaker is Lucinda Wright, who's the Vice President of the Armidale Sanctuary Humanitarian Settlement, and she'll present her presentation now. Thanks, Lucinda.
Good evening, everybody. Am I on? Yes?
Yep.
I too would like to pay my respects to the traditional custodians of this place on which we're meeting, and I'd like to thank Yolngu Visions for inviting Sanctuary to be part of this. So I thought I'd give a little bit of background about Armidale Sanctuary first. We've been assisting with the settlement of the Yazidi community since they began arriving in 2018. But we were actually involved in refugee settlement in Armidale long before that. We were formed in 2003 and we directly sponsored a number of families, mostly from Africa, and were fully responsible for their settlement in Armidale. We went on to lobby for Armidale to be a refugee settlement town under the Australian Government's humanitarian visa program and persuaded Armidale Council to come on board. We were very pleased when our efforts were successful and the Australian Government began to send Yazidi refugees for settlement in a number of regional settlements, including Armidale in 2018. When Settlement Services International was named as the primary agency responsible for the initial phase of settlement, we contacted them to offer our collaboration and experience after our successful settlement of a number of families here. But with the larger number of Yazidis arriving and the resources available, it became clear that Sanctuary's intensive one-on-one model of settlement was not practical. At the same time, SSI's way of working was not so suitable for a regional area where there were no existing Yazidi communities to offer social and cultural support to the new arrivals, and only basic introductions to housing and services were being offered. After these initial differences in approach, we formed a very good collaboration and working relationship, not only with SSI, but with the other settlement agencies, Mosaic and Starts. We've become the main volunteer organisation supporting these agencies, who often refer clients to us for additional support. So essentially, Armidale Sanctuary provides volunteers to assist families and individuals who arrive in Armidale under the refugee program. In the beginning, when there were only small numbers of Yazidis, we began to make contact by organising excursions and picnics and following up those introductions with ongoing contact between individual sanctuary members and Yazidi families. We helped with transport to appointments, particularly medical appointments, further afield in Tamworth and Newcastle. As at first the Yazidi families did not have cars, we organised for donations of bicycles and a bike safety and education day. We met some of the pregnant women through the refugee nurses and gave them support and baskets of items kindly provided by the Astra Club and Gaira. One of the largest and most successful efforts was the Home Readers Programme, set up by Faye Paris of Drummond Memorial Public School. This programme was aimed at assisting young children with their reading and English, as their parents often had limited education and were learning English themselves and so were not in a position to help. So volunteers went in pairs to the children's houses after school and helped them read books and other material. So as the Yazidi community grew larger and more settled and they bought their cars, and we've heard they've also now began buying houses, they were able to help with new arrivals, many of them family members. So Sanctuary's focus has shifted to providing volunteers for individuals who are more isolated in their homes and unable to attend TAFE English classes or who need extra social support. We still provide volunteers for extra English practice and some members volunteer as assistants in TAFE English classes. And I do that once a week as well. Volunteers provide some tutoring in specialised subjects like maths. We have quite a lot of well-educated volunteers who are able to provide those sort of services. And some have also helped students prepare for the HSC. And we've helped Yazidis prepare for driving tests and for the all-important citizenship test. And we've already heard that quite a few have, in fact, gained their Australian citizenship. I think it's a sign of success of our program that many sanctuary volunteers still visit the families that they met several years ago, even though the need for settlement assistance is much less. They've formed lasting, close friendships with them and are invited to participate in family occasions such as weddings and Yazidi festivals. We've all watched with affection and pride as Yazidis we know have graduated from school and TAFE English classes, started tertiary education, found jobs, and accepted their certificates of Australian citizenship. We know the trauma, hardship, and loss that they have struggled to overcome, and we have seen how much they have achieved in a short time. But there are challenges, and for Sanctuary, those challenges are: we're mostly amateurs without much special training, dealing with people who are traumatised and still missing family members and who are suffering. We always need more volunteers, as the demand is always greater than we can meet, and I've left some brochures about Sanctuary and some application forms in case there are people here who are interested in joining. I'd like to acknowledge the dedication, the hours and hard work many volunteers have put in. But for most of us, the effort has been more than compensated by the rewards of trust and friendship with the Yazidi families and celebration of their remarkable achievements. Not forgetting, of course, enjoying their wonderful hospitality and their delicious flat bread. So thank you.
Thank you, Lucinda. Our next speaker is Anne Ricks, who is General Manager of New England Family Support Service. Thank you, Anne.
Right, how is that, everybody? Okay, good. I too would like to acknowledge the Arawan people who for centuries have walked this cold high country and their elders past, present and emerging. I'd like to thank you all for turning out tonight. We've got a wonderful audience here and you're very engaged and very quiet. So thank you for coming out on what's probably quite a cool evening out there too, I think. And thank you to my fellow wonderful presenters. I've followed some amazing people and with one amazing person to come. So I think I'm in very, very good company indeed tonight. New England Family Support Service is a medium charity. We operate across most of New England Northwest, so north to Tenterfield and out to Moree, down south to Tamworth and out to Walker. So we cover quite a large geographical area. We have 11 funded programs, so we're funded by the state government and the Commonwealth government, and we've also got 2 philanthropic funders. So we're very fortunate to be funded by Mazda Foundation and also by the Foundation for Rural and Regional Renewal. So we've got some really big government agencies, but also some private funders as well behind us, which is wonderful to have. We've got 24 staff. Amongst those staff are 4 Azidi staff members, 2 of whom are here tonight. I won't put them on the spot, but thank you very much for attending tonight. We have all in all 10 staff from non-English speaking background, and we have 7 Aboriginal staff. And one of the other service providers in town jokingly called us the United Nations the other day. So I must say that having a multicultural workforce is amazing because it's one hell of a brains trust. And there aren't too many issues that come up that people don't come up with a suggestion for or a solution for. So I'm a very lucky manager. With the people that we have on our teams. They're absolutely fantastic. We've been working as an agency with the Azidi community since they first arrived, really. We've been working with state government funding in the space, but it's not been enough funding. And we've struggled, and we've particularly struggled, as previous speakers have said, with finding Azidi translators. It's not very appropriate to ask members of the community themselves to translate, particularly when matters are quite sensitive. So, you know, it's always been quite a challenge to find someone who can translate accurately for us. But, you know, we're starting to find that, you know, for matters that aren't hugely sensitive, having 4 Azidi staff members within our organisation's been great because they have been able to help with things that are reasonably routine. 4 Azidi people, the main services that they have access with us to date have been things like our family support casework. And also, we have a home tutoring program called HIPPI. And HIPPI is fantastic in that it actually has tutors that go into people's homes and provide support for families with children aged 3 and 4 years to help the whole family really prepare for entry into the Australian school system. So it's been that's been one of the programs that the families have accessed. The other one that they like, and I must admit as a manager I love attending, is supported playgroup, where, you know, the families are supported by our staff and the children come along with a parent or a carer and, you know, have a whole range of activities, and we have guest speakers come and speak as well, child and family nurses, Trezillion, you know, even nutritionists, things like that. And that's always really well received by the families. And I love going because it's joyous. It's a lot of fun. And so they're the kind of things that our Azidi families have been accessing when we were primarily funded by the state. We have been very fortunate lately. In as of 1st of July, we've actually become a settlement engagement and transition funded program. So that's funded by Home Affairs. And this means that, you know, we've always had a terrific relationship with SSI and with Mosaic and with STARTS, but this enables us to formally work in the space. And what it means is, you know, I had a question the other day. Someone said to me, why are there now, you know, three sets of providers in town? The answer is simply that Home Affairs realised that we were doing this work and that we were, I guess, hemorrhaging funding. We were doing the work because we felt that the community needed support and we wanted to provide that support. It mattered to us as an organisation. And so Home Affairs really are only recognising the work that we have been doing, and they're adding us into the mix with some wonderful partner organisations. And I take my hat off to Settlement Services International, to Mosaic and to STARTS, because all of those organisations have been so welcoming to us since we officially came into the space. We've already had our meetings and we've worked out how we can work together very collegiately to be most effective supporting one another. And that can only be beneficial to all new entrants to Australia, because this isn't only about the Yazidi community, as my colleagues will say. It's about anybody who becomes a new entrant to our Armidale community who needs a range of supports and who needs assistance, who needs agencies to walk with them and help them settle in very well to our wonderful community. And I say our community because it's all of us together, it's we and us that form part of the wonderful multicultural groups that, you know, form part of Armidale and that add to the richness and diversity of our communities. I wondered whether I would give you a little example of the kind of things that we do. So I thought about a bit of a de-identified case and a family that we did work with some time ago. And we had a mother who was moving house and she had quite a large family. And, oh, don't we all know the joys of moving house? What do they say? It's the third most stressful thing after death and divorce and moving house. I think it goes something in that order anyway. And the mother was managing quite well, but then just became completely overwhelmed. And one of the children rang our caseworker and said, hey, mum's getting really overwhelmed. We've just moved house. Can you come and see? And so the caseworker, this was in the evening, which is not our standard working hours, but the caseworker gave me a call and said, you know, hey, Anne, you know, this, I've had this call. And I said, oh, well, let's both go. And so we went and we had a look at the situation. And I must say, even although mum was a bit overwhelmed, their move was going a lot better than some of my moves have, in that the kids were like a well-mobilised little army and the boxes were all kind of in the rooms they were supposed to be in. Mum had just become very tired. And so what we did really was we enabled mum to rest, but we also called Refugee Health and had a chat to them and made sure we got some support and some advice around, you know, what was clearly a case of being very exhausted. The children were very forthright about telling us what they wanted for dinner, and we made up some beds and we did a lot of practical things. And one of the children came with me and we did the pizza thing and ordered the pizzas, and we then organised for the children to be transported to school the next day and for Refugee Health to come and do a check the following day, and it all went very smoothly. It's very practical stuff, isn't it? But it's the kind of help that and support and walking with, I guess, that people need. a bit of additional help with when they've already had an awful lot to do in their lives and a lot of stress and a lot of trauma. But, you know, we're looking forward to continuing to work actively in the space. We're looking forward to continuing that really respectful and wonderful partnership with the Yazidi community and with other multicultural arrivals as they come, and working very closely with our partner agencies and services to make sure that, you know, we can be the best that we can be in this space, because the Yazidi community is extraordinary. They are amazing and they deserve all of our ongoing advocacy, all of the practical assistance we can give, and they can't do anything other than enrich our communities magnificently as time goes by. Thank you for your attention tonight.
Thank you very much, Anne. And it's my pleasure to introduce our final speaker tonight, Tim Gray, who is Senior Manager Policy, Contracts and Reporting for Humanitarian Settlement Program, HSP, of Settlement Services International. Thank you, Tim. You probably need to up that a bit.
No, you're right. Thanks, everyone, for having me. I'd also just like to acknowledge the land in which we're meeting today. So I guess we're sort of responsible for the first part of this journey. So SSI is contracted to provide the HSP program, so Humanitarian Settlement Program. So SSI looks after settlement for Sydney, Armidale, Coffs Harbour and Newcastle. So there's about 4,500 new entrants every year. And of that 4,500, about 250 or so settle here in Armidale. So I'm probably of more relevance here in my substantive role, which was looking after the Armidale team, which I did for most of the initial journey. And I still sit in our Armidale office, and I can't help but still be interested in what's happening locally. So we provide the initial services and we receive our referrals directly from the Department of Home Affairs. And so what that looks like in practice is that we have individuals and families, they're travelling internationally into Sydney. We manage the transit component in Sydney, and then their families are arriving here in Armidale. Then families pretty much enter the wildest couple of weeks they could have, where we bombard them with probably way too much information, way too many appointments, and they'll probably only remember 10% of what we try and tell them in that period of time. But that's sort of some of the bounds that we're stuck with in terms of the contract that we have. So in that first 2 weeks, we've got to make sure that people are set up with Centrelink, Medicare, we've made referrals to Refugee Health, to TAFE, to schools. We provide on-arrival accommodation, so families receive free accommodation for 28 days, and then there's a negotiated rate of rent that they can pay to stay on beyond that 28 days in our accommodation. And then we help them secure long-term property. That's probably the most important thing of those initial services that we do, because I think a lot of families really can't sort of settle until they're in their own property and they feel comfortable there. And then we provide a furniture package. It's not the flashiest furniture package, but it's enough to get people sort of through that first period of time until they're established in working and just settled a bit better. There's a large component of orientation we provide, so some of that is formal. And so within our metro area, and this is what was touched on before about the model being sort of very metro-centric, the model that where it happens in Sydney takes into consideration that there's very large diaspora communities that support new families that come in. Armidale, especially in the beginning, that wasn't the case at all. So there's a formal orientation component and then a lot of informal orientation. And so that informal stuff is probably the most important. I remember our orientation trainer in the earlier days saying, you know, oh, this is this client's fifth trip to the office so that we can show them how to use the ATM. And it's very small things like that that probably made early settlement quite a challenge, because there's nobody else there to show the first families how to go to the ATM five times. These days things are vastly different. There's a well-established community and people sort of know the assistance that's required as well. So that's within the community and within the services that we work with as well. So within our service, we've got sort of two tiered levels of support. So there's a normal level of support and then there is a more intensive level of support. So that more intensive level is probably the only pathway available to families and individuals that is not directly from Home Affairs. So people can make a referral into the specialised intensive services pathway. But its intention is to be very short term and to provide connections to the existing services that exist in the town. There's a bit of a challenge there in a regional location, and that's probably that at that point in time, we've probably already connected families to all the services that are available, because it is such a small town. We know most of them are sitting right here. We know who to pick up the phone and call if a family needs connection. But what it does mean is that the caseload for that case manager is slightly lower. As far as a team, the Armidale team is quite well resourced as far as a HSP provider. So we've got 9 full-time staff here in Armidale. Eligibility is 12 to 18 months, and we try to stick to that. Probably one of the biggest saving graces for settlement here was actually COVID. Now, the deficit of that, of course, is that nobody's families came. The upshot was that it meant that we could hold onto the caseload for much longer. So the average time throughout that period was about 2.5 years that we were providing services. And so that probably just provided the initial support at the front end of settlement that families really required. And so sometimes that's not necessarily intensive service support, but it's just that there's a caseworker you can go back to if things pop up. And as the community settled, the needs changed quite a lot. So things that popped up were always changing as well. Probably over the last 7 years, the wider Armidale community has probably learned just as much as the Yazidi community has. You see that through little things in shop windows and on, the front desks of shops. How people interact with people from a different community. So, I think it's been a hugely rewarding experience, not only for the Yazidi community, but for the wider community. Probably the key takeaway message is that the HSP program is quite prescriptive in how it provides services. So it's funded to provide specific pieces of work. And so we try to be creative about that, but the key aspect is that it means that we need the support of other services and community to help fill the gaps. And so we'd be in a very different space, I think, if it wasn't for the services sitting here, as well as other key services that have really gone out of their way to think creatively, think differently, and do things out of the box. The TAFE, the university, the refugee health unit, so they're probably the pointier end of the services that we're using for all clients. But even down to things like, Yarella Community Transport and, learning how to use an interpreting service, it's been a learning journey for everybody. Yeah, so I guess that's what we do. Challenges, there's a very long list. I probably wouldn't go into the specifics. I think everything is a bit of a journey. And there's a lot of learnings that are taken out of them. So the course that Peter was talking about before, I think it means that settlement here has set it's arrived at a bit more of a mature position where the learnings that have happened here in Armidale are now being taken to a settlement location that's actually a more established and longer-term settlement location. So I think that's pretty cool. The biggest challenge I would see for the community at the moment is probably around visa status. So those that enter into the HSP program come in on four key visa types. So that's a 200, so that's special humanitarian visa. That's most of our clients across the service. 201s, and so that's where most Azidis are sitting. And so that means you're in country, you're a refugee within your own country. Now, what happens for a lot of other settlement locations is that someone comes out on a 200 class and then they sponsor their family who also wants to leave the situation they're in. And so they come on a 202 visa. Now, if you're on a 201 and you're in country, you're not eligible to sponsor your family on a 202 because you have to have left the country in which you're being persecuted. And so that's a really fundamental challenge for this community, because it means that they lack the advocacy to be able to support additional family to leave the situation. And that means that you're very much at the whim of the Department of Home Affairs to make decisions about who gets a ticket out of the enormous number of people seeking that refugee status and the very small number in which Australia accepts. And just to round it out, the final visa type is a 204, and so that's women at risk, and it's issued to quite a small community, but that's actually how Coffs Harbour Settlement was established, just all women at risk communities, and then it grew from that, whereas it was chosen to just have one community here and build an established group through that process. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tim. We've had six absolutely fascinating presentations. I've learned a huge amount myself. And I think I now hand over to Peter or Maria? To Martin. I think it's time for questions. So I think Martin and Peter will be looking after this. Thank you.
Sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, we now have about 20 minutes to take some questions from the audience. And I'd like to thank the fantastic information that's been shared with the panellists tonight. I'm sure that a lot of us have learnt a lot how the refugee resettlement process works, what the different agencies do, how they collaborate so well together. And it's great to see a community like the Yazidi community be absorbed into the Armidale community so successfully.